Hi, thanks for downloading and listening to the 4 Million Years Later podcast. This has been a series where two friends get together and watch an episode of the Generation 1 Transformers cartoon in story order, and then convene to talk about what they saw, comparing their perspectives as children who fell in love with the show in the 80s, never fell out of love with it, with the perspectives of ourselves as adults who have talked about this show on the telephone for a quarter century. Having finished the entire run of the series, we're now finally convening to do our long-awaited mailbag episode. My name is Jersey Drozd. I'm a cartoonist and teaching artist.
My name is Hoover.
Hey, Hoover. We did it. We did it. We're done, right?
Kind of, sort of, a little bit. But there's still going to be one more episode after this.
Oh, man. So see, anybody who actually feels sad about this project ending, you got one more.
It's like the Lord of the Rings. Just when you think it's wrapped up, there's a little bit more. Just when you think this is it, there's a little bit more.
Yeah, we still got to go to the Shire and see Frodo get all sad when he sees that hobbits are, you know, conspiring with Saruman and his cronies to take him. Oh, spoilers.
We didn't see that in the movie.
I know, so it might as well have not happened. But yeah, we've been putting out a call for letters from people for a number of months now as we've been closing in on the end of the show. And we got a number of emails, and it was really nice.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot of love directed towards us, as you will see.
I came across a lecture by a psychologist recently who was kind of noting that historically in Western culture, seeking attention is like largely sort of correlated with shame. Like it's shameful to seek attention, right? And I am of the mind that there's something really nice and wholesome and complete about going through an experience and seeing how the world feels about that experience, right? So something I do, and even what I just did there with my voice, and I said, right, that is something I do in my classroom to check for comprehension. I just said a thing, right? Let me hear how you feel about that thing that I just said. It's a way to see how you are sort of landing in the world. So I'm grateful for all the people who took the time to collect some thoughts into text and send it to us. So
letters, we get letters, we get sacks and sacks of letters.
I'll read the first letter. It's from Bill G, and it says, "You guys are terrible. Why are you wasting my time with this dumb show? Why can't you just die already?" No, just kidding.
I don't think we got a single email like that.
We didn't anything remotely less than high praise.
That's really great. I mean, because, yeah, I've been podcasting for a long time now. And in my early days, I remember getting my share of really unhappy, unpleasant, mean-spirited messages from people who said like really mean things about my voice and my laugh, and it's nice that they have completed a project where, you know, universally all the feedback was is you guys are pretty okay. They all gave us the Duke at the end of the G.I. Joe miniseries. You do okay. So all right, procedure, you want me to read the letter and then we'll respond to it?
Sure, let's do it that way.
All right, so first letter comes from Mike G. "Jersey and Hoover!" Exclamation point. "Since I discovered your podcast this past summer, I have listened to them all so far. I have shared them with my kids and love the art on your TeePublic site." Well, thank you for that. I drew them. He says, that, parenthetically, "The Cassettes Before Jets is my daughter's favorite." Aww! The kid likes my drawings. That makes me even happier. Although that was Hoover's intellectual property in terms of the idea. I just drew it. He's the writer. I'm just the artist if we're going to get into like Wizard Magazine territory.
Swiping my idea! I'll sue!
But anyway, "I have been a G1 Transformer fan since 1984. I received Skywarp as my first Transformer toy that year." Wow. "My favorite con is Soundwave, parenthetically. He is the GOAT, for he lasted all 80 issues in the Marvel run of the comic." I didn't realize that. And he concludes by saying, "Your podcast has caused me to rewatch a lot of episodes that I missed in season 3. Keep up the great work." Ah, and then he sent us a follow-up email. It says, "I've got back to the beginning and I've listened to all the episodes. I would listen a lot with my teenage kids in the car. While my 13-year-old son appreciates it, it's my 16-year-old daughter who has come to love it as well." Okay, no, wait, Mike, you do know that this is a show with two middle-aged men talking about Transformers, and a kid likes it? That's incredible. Okay, I'll save my commentary for later. But yes, I'm just taking a moment to blink like Hugh Grant at that sentence. She has started watching all seasons in order. She has even gone back to read all of my G1 Marvel comics. Parenthetically, she is enjoying the comic more as of late. This has brought me great joy in showing her all the toys, shows, and comics about the Transformers. She will even wear your apparel out and about. Signed, Mike G. Holy moly, Hoover! Wow. I'm just gonna breathe in a bag for a second while you take the first response.
See, gang, 4 million years later brings families together. I've done some extensive research here, and a very high percentage of broken, unhappy families do not listen to 4 million years later. You think that's a coincidence? I don't think so.
Nope.
And Mike even sent us evidence, visual evidence, of his daughter wearing the Cassettes Before Jets shirt, and that is totally awesome. Not only do I love seeing the younger generation get into G1, but I love seeing younger girls get into G1 even more. So you smash those stereotypes, ladies. Overthrow the patriarchy. Transformers is not just for boys.
Yeah, I have to agree with that last sentiment. I love the idea of somebody retroactively taking all those marketing yo-yos and slapping their face with a wet fish, saying, like, you really think that only boys are going to enjoy this, right? Come now. Surely you can do better than that. Because here we are 30-some-odd years later, and there's teenage kids presenting as male or female enjoying this thing. It's for everybody. That's so cool. But yeah, I'm trying to get over this idea of like the stereotype I have in my head. Like, as somebody who works with children, I shouldn't have stereotypes in my head. But here I am with a stereotype saying, like, when I do school visits, kids say, "Do you have a YouTube channel?" And I'm like, "I do." And they all like get out their pencils to write down. I'm like, "But you don't want to watch it," is what I say to them. It's a middle-aged man drawing and talking about storytelling. No child in the world wants to watch this show. You know? Because here I am thinking that all young people want out of their internet content is TikTok videos and then like reaction videos, watching people watch a video and then laugh at a video, right? But yeah, it turns out there's people like Mike G who have raised children who actually like want to do story analysis. How cool is that?
And they listen to one of their father's favorite podcasts and they don't say everything's lame. Ugh.
Right. That's the other stereotype I have in my head is that 90s kid with the Green Day shirt, right? Happiness is poison. You know, no, it's like, you know, some people like to think about story and laugh. So, Mike, I can't thank you enough for not only, well, getting the shirt for your kids. What a nice guy. Both to us and to your kids, but then also capturing all these thoughts, sharing them with us, and creating an environment where his young ones want to actually hang out with dad and think about story. I'm being really sincere now, is that like, as somebody who, you know, largely deals in story, both as a teaching artist and a cartoonist, it's like, I think it's the richest, most natural way to communicate and to make it a fun and accessible thing for everybody to participate in. Without having to be, you know, because one thing I will say that I think you'll agree with me, Hoover, I don't think either of us is highfalutin, right? we don't have big noses as Morrissey would describe, you know? So yeah, that's really meaningful to me. So gosh, Mike, I don't know what else to say. Is there anything else to say?
Well, that's awesome. We appreciate you turning your children onto a nice solid product like Transformers. I mean, you know, having them listen to our podcast is cool enough, but you're positively affecting the future by raising children who like cool things.
Well, and actually, I would also argue that getting them on board via story analysis, here I am on my, this is going to be my corner that I'm going to sit in, and I'm not going to move. But I mean, there's a media literacy angle to that, right? Making people aware that storytellers do things audio, visual, and in text that is meant to move us in any kind of direction, and making us aware of what choices are available to us makes us a smarter consumer of media. So I'm not going to suggest that 4 million years later is any kind of panacea for misinformation, But it certainly, I think, is helpful to be aware. Like I had one of my favorite memories, and this is like a decade ago, a student came up to me and said, I was watching Criminal Minds with my dad last night and I guessed the ending. And he said, how did you know? And she said, I take Jersey's class. I'm like, did that feel pretty good? She's like, yeah, it felt really good. I'm like, I know. It's a blessing and a curse.
See, they can take these sort of story analysis nuggets and apply it to their own favorite things. You know, yeah. If they like shows more than Transformers or whatever, you know, and yeah. I mean, this sounds stupid, but everything you see has a story. So
yes.
It's like these are very applicable traits that we're sort of passing on.
And I mean, if you want to dig down even deeper, see, we're in mailbag now, so I don't have to actually have this be specifically about Transformers. But if you get into like, say, like meditation and even group facilitated meditation, one of the things you discover is that we are constantly making up stories about everybody around us all the time. And the case in point, I'll use as an example, is I was in a group meditation, which is called a circling session. And I'm in this virtual room with 25 strangers. And there's this guy that I look at. I'm like, they're going to put us in breakout rooms. And that's the guy I absolutely do not want to be in a room with, because I feel absolutely intimidated by that guy. He's got long hair. He's got rings. He's got necklaces. He looks really cool. He probably plays an instrument. You know, he's so much more intense and awesome than me. Every emotion he feels like 10 times bigger than I feel. I'm going to be a fool in this guy's presence. And we got in the breakout room. And he starts disclosing all this insecurity. He feels really insecure about me. He doesn't know what I'm thinking about him. I'm like, oh, that's right. Everybody feels, you know, a little bit seen and in a bad way sometimes. And I completely had a manufactured fictional account of who this man was, right? And once I realized that, I'm like, I am doing this all the time. So once again, story literacy is a powerful thing because it helps you realize when you're doing it to yourself too. So anyway, sorry. we're 12 minutes in and I'm already doing this over. I haven't even had my juice yet. Do you want to move on to the next letter?
It's like the Energizer Bunny. Okay, let's move on to our next letter. Reach into the mailbag.
All right, we got a rustling noise here. That's not a rustling noise. I don't know what that was. That was like a Looney Tunes noise. From Timothy. Hey, Timothy. It says, hello, guys, ! I just discovered the podcast and wanted to say I love it so much, ! Also, I wrote a fanfic if you'd like to give it a look. And he links to it, and we will link to it in the notes. Hoover, you want to respond to this one first?
Well, you can find the link to this fanfic in our show notes, as we said. And it's called The Existential Dread of Sludge. And this was a fun fanfic featuring the most underutilized Season 2 Autobot, Skids. If you'll remember, Skids is like in two scenes of one episode and has like two lines.
Well,
that's
just
it?
Robotic insecticide?
Yeah, and that's the depth of the second line he has. So the great thing about a character with two or three lines in one episode is that you can take the story nearly anywhere you want with that. And on top of that, when your text specs function is theoretician? Seriously? You can really sink your teeth into that and tell an interesting story. Especially if you pair him with Sludge, of all people, and put them together, trapped in a cave style. And as we've discussed numerous times, all me and Jersey really want to do is trap two characters together in a cave and see how their personalities do or do not mesh. That is almost always a good recipe. So thank you, Timothy, for sharing your work with us. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really cool, and we're going to have that link to it, so I hope the rest of y'all read it.
As I was reading it, all I could think about was how the voice actor of Skids, who we get to cast because Skids has like two different voice actors and they only did one line each. So it's up in the air. There's no canonical Skids voice. And so I was thinking Joseph, I think it's pronounced Schildkraut. He was Mr. Kralik in Shop Around the Corner. I don't know how familiar you are with his acting. He's a 1940s actor.
No, I'm afraid I'm not.
But he has like this rapid vocal cadence and he has like this kind of sing-song tone to his voice. That's all I could hear when I was reading his Skids lines. So because Skids has some pretty long and complex sentences as he cheerfully talks about existentialism. And
as any theoretician should.
Right. Yeah. It was a really fun. And I feel like he captured Sludge's voice pretty well, too.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a cute moment at the end with Grimlock being a little apologetic about the beginning of the story. So
he also has the Dinobots call Wheeljack Pop, which I think is really cute.
And am I corrected that he also has them calling Ratchet Mom?
I think I remember that now. Yeah.
So yeah, Timothy, that was a cute and thoughtful Trapped in a Cave story. I enjoyed it, and thank you for sharing that with us, and also just giving us the high five of making this podcast for a couple years.
Well, let's move on to our next letter from a name you may have heard on this podcast before. Who's it from, Jersey?
It is from Guy in the UK. And he says, "Hello, gentlemen, period." Now, see how it's different over here in the North America? Everybody's like, "Hey, guys, exclamation point." You go over to the UK, and it's, "Hello, gentlemen, period."
So, Jersey, put on a British accent for this.
No, nobody wants to hear that.
Oh, no. Governor.
Yes, we all know the Dick Van Dyke British voice. Nobody wants to hear it. You can just go watch Mary Poppins if you want that. Or Fitzwillie or whatever other one he did where he does that nonsense. Anyway, hello, gentlemen. It's your UK correspondent, Guy Jessup Braithwaite. Hope you're both well. Well, it's coming to the end. I'm bummed out, but also intrigued as to what's coming next. Parenthetically, Beast Wars? Thank you for doing this podcast. I love it. Is it me, or did Headmasters and Target Masters suck? Or did you two like it? Can't wait to find out. It has to be said, I won't miss Skylynx, a.k.a. Captain Blowhard. Anyway, I'll stop yakking and sign off. All hail Megatron. Regards, Guy.
Well, for those of you who may not remember, Guy was our first UK listener to write in after we asked the poignant question, are Grapple and Hoist supposed to sound British? Emphasis on supposed to. Since accents are handled in the American media with the accuracy and delicacy of a hammer flying through glass wrapped in tissue paper, we found that we had a fan in the UK to get answers from, and he was able to tell us that yes, in he and his friends' minds in 1985, the actors for Grapple and Hoist were indeed doing very bad versions of British accents. And I will break the news now. We are not doing Beast Wars next.
Aww.
We would both love to talk about the 52 episodes of Beast Wars. It is very special to both of us. Mm-hmm. And it came along only a couple years after we first met. So we experienced it together as it unfolded. And we both got absolutely hooked within a small handful of episodes, taping it on VHS every week. Beast Wars is also probably the last TV show that had a moment that made me actually jump up off the couch and yell, "Oh my God!" They don't write them like that anymore, folks. In a perfect world, this likely would be our next project, but I simply no longer have the time to spend on a project with that kind of depth because I would sink into that.
Yes, you would.
And as far as Headmasters and Target Masters, I think everybody knows our take on that now after the last few episodes. In short, I like the idea on paper more than I did their execution. Also, it's okay to be wrong about your feelings on Skylynx. We do not think any less of you for it.
Now, remember, before you do anything, think, is this what Skylynx would do in my position? And you will not go far wrong.
And please say hi to the Spice Girls for me.
Oh, man. Beast Wars. It would be super fun to do Beast Wars because, gosh.
Because it's so great. If any of you haven't watched Beast Wars, watch it. And if you say, oh, the CGI looks horribly dated. Yeah, it does. Doesn't matter. It's so good, you won't care.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's fun to watch how much it improves in just two seasons. Like, so much. Like, in season one, nobody has a shadow. By season two, it's like they figured out shadows. And in season three, they figured out facial acting so much more than they had in season one or two. So it was really fun to watch. And this is like anything with, like, any kind of skill acquisition or technological development, is that the early moves seem so much bigger than what happens later, right? Like, the difference between, like, say, Moana and, say, like, Toy Story 3 is not that big. right? But like Beast Wars season 3 and season 1, it's like it's a yeah. very noticeable difference. But I also, I mean, not to like get into the weeds on it, but to give everybody a taste of what a Beast Wars podcast between the two of us would be like, is I have to wonder how much of it also has to do with the time it came out in and what our expectations were regarding children's entertainment coming out of the 80s, right? Because like it was 96, so we're like more than halfway through the 90s, but leading up to that, maybe I shouldn't say this because I wasn't paying that close attention to all 90s kids media. I forget when Totally Spies came out. I think I feel like that was the 2000s.
Yeah, I think that was a little later. Early 2000s, probably.
Yeah, so before Beast Wars, I mean, you really had like, well, you had Reboot, of course, and you had the Power Rangers, and I'm trying to think what else would have been on TV at the time.
Well, also in the Power and Up the Power Block was G.I. Joe Extreme and Vortech. Yeah.
Vortech, that's right. And then, yeah, and on the station I watched on, they would advertise The Street Sharks was another show that came out that time.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, it's just like arriving at that show when we did, not expecting to ever have a continuation of Generation 1 Transformers, right? We
figured by the way, if you don't know, Beast Wars is firmly in the G1 timeline.
Yep. And which explains why we're getting this new Transformers movie where Optimus Primal's going to be in it, right? It's like it's that part that's that much canonical in for those who are fans of the, you know, Optimus Prime is a red truck story. So, but I think that part of what makes it so memorable is that it does things that we had never seen up to that point, right? A continuing arc in a storyline. There were real stakes where, like, you know, when I say real stakes, I mean real stakes a la Transformers the movie stakes. So it just felt bigger and more polished and more, I don't want to say smarter, but like the thing that Bob Forward said in an interview is that he and DiTilio sat down and said, let's write a really good science fiction show that happens to be about Transformers. And I think that that approach really made it feel like a quantum leap above what we had previously had. So yes, it you the characters are like 30% more lovable. The stakes are 30% higher. So it just felt like, just like how we've said repeatedly about Gen 1, it's like it's way better than what we deserved given what it is.
Right.
Beast Wars was that much more, so it felt even more like a gift. So when you get to the season 2 finale, that was like, yeah, I remember calling you on the phone like immediately after watching it. And it was both of us just like talking like John Machida at each other. So, I also feel like I have to like sort of like hold my cards close to the vest in that I also feel funky about recommending a show that you got to wait for it. If you get 12 episodes in, it gets really good. I don't want, people's time is precious.
True. But the payoff is so much worth it with that one.
Yes,
I also don't like to jump into shows like, well, if you watch 30 episodes, it ends up being pretty good. Like, no, it's not enough time for that. But Beast Wars is worth the trip.
All right. Oh, just real quick, also to give people a teaser what a Beast Wars show could be. Who's your favorite Beast Wars character?
Dinobot.
Of course.
And Inferno is also a favorite.
Yeah, I remember one year when that show was there, you sent me a birthday card, and it was a picture of Dinobot, and like the greeting inside was like a little letter from Dinobot to me.
I don't even remember
written in
that.
His voice. Yeah, and for me, for those who've watched the show, I'll give you 2 seconds to guess. Ding, 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 you're correct. It was Tigatron. Oh, I love Tigatron so much. My cat's middle name is Tigatron, so...
And we are two guys who first saw the Beast Wars toys and was like, what are these? What are they doing? Yeah. Why are they doing that? Because they actually look like real animals and not like cybernetic animals like we got in especially season 4 of G1.
Oh, and even when we watched the first episode on the phone together. I called you on the phone. We're like, let's watch this together. And then when Megatron started talking with us, oh, yes. I was like, he sounds like Psykill from the GoBots. This sucks. Optimus Primal just sounds like a guy. He doesn't sound like a hero. Why is he so angry?
And then like a couple weeks later, we were like, oh boy, Beast Wars is on.
And where I was, it came out at 6 o'clock in the morning. So I had to, like, you know, set the VCR and, you know, I remember, like, getting up early in my 20s, you know, like, tell my roommate, shut up, dude. Beast Wars is on. Oh, man.
Appointment television, kids. You'll never know the beauty of it.
Yeah. Yep. I remember that's another reason I was so glad when it came out on DVD, because for ages, I think it was The Aftermath Part 2. I was 1.5 minutes late to taping it. And so I never saw the first minute and a half of that show. And it ate me up. And so when the DVDs came out, I was like, I finally get to see that precious 90 seconds of animation of the Wild West shootout. Anyway. Yeah, so thank you, Guy, for prompting us with that. And I the only thing I take issue with in his letter is all hail Megatron. I hard disagree. That is not the way to my heart. I don't hail Megatron. Well, although I haven't watched, you know, what is it, like Spark Shine? What is the new show? Spark, Earth Spark. You know, I know he's nice.
Put on that show I like, Oscar and Bucky.
Sorry.
Put on Spark Shine.
Shine Spark is what Metroid does. But yeah, no, I know he's a nice guy in the new show, so I'm ready to be like, is this the show where I finally like Megatron? But all things being equal, I'm never going to smile at somebody who says I'll hail Megatron and be like, nope, he's a jerk. He's a bad man.
Okay, so let's move on to this letter here.
Oh, we're staying over there, across the pond, as they say. This is from Ben in the UK. Hey, Jersey. I'm writing once again to thank you for the great show and update you on the efforts to make dog lunch a thing. We got to talk about that when we respond to this letter. So I feel like it's been a long time. I recently wore your fine depiction of a shamed burger to TF Nation, the largest Transformers convention in Europe. I was walking around all day seeing the flickers of recognition as people's eyes were drawn to your dog lunch. In particular, Jim Sorensen, author of Transformers: A Visual History, I think I have this book, did a double take whilst in the middle of a conversation with someone else. Also, noted TF collector Sixo, co-host of the fantastic Triple Takeover Toycast, complimented me on the shirt and confided that he's been fascinated by the line since childhood, never knowing what it meant. I, of course, took the opportunity to plug your podcast while sympathizing with his confusion. Thank you for that, Ben. Anyhow, I'm quickly realizing that it's already a thing amongst those of us who grew up on the Transformers. We've all been quietly wondering what on earth a dog lunch is. Nobody's by the way, I'm just going to pause in this letter reading. Timothy, if you're listening, this could be your next fanfic, you know, explaining what a dog lunch is, giving us the canonical backstory.
Dog lunch, the origin.
With find another, like, you know, out of the way Autobot who nobody gives any love to. Anyway, nobody's verbalizing this inner turmoil, but your design encourages open and frank discussion on this important topic.
Oh, that's 4 million years later, kids. We're bringing the important issues to the surface and starting national international dialogue.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, Ben, I think you, somebody cut a piece of my spark off or cut a piece of your spark off, but I feel like they're connected somehow. The influx of female attention I was expecting has not yet materialized. Wah, wah. I'm sorry I lied to you, Ben. I had thought that a man in his early 40s, wearing an obscure quote from a show he watched when 8, was a surefire love magnet, but alas, I must be wearing it wrong. Yeah, sardonic much, Ben? My best to you and Hoover. I'm behind on my listening, and whilst looking at tinned beans in the supermarket today, came across a mention of my purchase in the Grimlock's New Brain episode. I promptly dropped my tin. It moved me to write. Keep up the stellar podcastery. Ben, still in the UK. Oh, my gosh.
Well, to quote Cyclonus in the Six Shot commercial, that's two UK listeners. Well, first off, thank you for your assistance in making dog lunch a common term and parading around in one of our shirts at a TFCon in front of the likes of Jim Sorensen and Sixo. I think I've got all of the Jim Sorensen TF books, and I highly recommend Sixo's Transformers Photo Library on Facebook. Just look up Sixo's Transformers Photo Library. And both are boons to the fandom, for sure. And as far as getting female attention from our shirts, You were clearly wearing it wrong. You see, you just have to get the body of Dwayne The Rock Johnson first, and then you order the shirt one size too small, and then line your pockets with hundreds of $100 bills, and just have them stick out a little beneath the shirt, and then the ladies will follow you.
Okay.
Especially if you leave a trail of those $100 bills, they're going to follow you wherever you go. So doing those very small changes to what you did, in addition to wearing one of our shirts, will result in more attention from the ladies, I'm sure of it.
Well, and I'm sure that the ones who are attracted to you are all deeply mercenary and shallow people. So I do love his delivery. I mean, you could hear, you know, the sarcasm drip off of every word. Surely a man in his early 40s wearing an obscure quote from a show he watched when he was 8 was a surefire love magnet. Oh, man. I can't get over the thought of, and this is where I get a little bit selfish, but I like being seen. Sorry. My drawing of Sean Berger looking ashamed, like catching the eye of other people. That makes me so happy. That makes me so happy.
And that makes me happy, too, because initially, Jersey drew him very happy. And that's we right, used that on another image. And I'm like, right. Wait a minute. You can't put Sean Berger looking all happy under the word dog lunch. He has to be like all downtrodden and looking down like he did at the end of that episode. And so Jersey redrew it. And that's honestly the one that sells more.
That's funny. And I mean, yes, because that's the moment where we all remember his fall. But if you go back to that episode, this would be a good opportunity for y'all to go back and listen to Megatron's Master Plan Parts 1 and 2, because I got really kind of fired up about Sean Berger as a villain. As a villain who speaks the truth, but in a dishonest way, right? He's like, well, I'm helping Megatron because I'm bringing justice to the world. But then he'll tell Megatron, I want two cities, right? So it's like, how self-aware is he? Like, is this like a childish impulse that he just wants power and he's rationalizing it after the fact so he can make himself look like a good guy to the outside world, but he knows that deep down he's just like a greedy child? And then when Megatron reveals his true motives to the world and shames Sean Berger in front of everybody, you think, there's the opportunity for growth. He's going to become a good guy. And he kind of does. But he kind of doesn't, right? He saves Spike or Chip. I forget which one of them, but he saves one. No, Spike. He saves Spike. Mm-hmm. But then, like, after he does it, Megatron's like, you want that reward after? He's like, yes, right? He goes right back to being a villain. So there's something, like, really frail and sad about Sean Berger. Anyway, I don't think the writers really meant that much depth in the character, but it's there if you want to pick it apart. If you like sifting through, you know, little bits of junk in wool. But anyway, so yeah, it's a good opportunity to go back and listen to that episode. But I'm so grateful to Ben for not only buying the shirt, but being like, I want to wear it to a Transformers convention and see what happens, and then report my findings, right?
And talking us up to people who matter.
That's true. Yeah, also saying, like, it, you know, these guys are actually talking about Transformers and it's fun to listen to. But yeah, I'm intrigued that the fact that we all wondered about that dog lunch line, but it's like I still have this deep, deep need for that phrase to become like a popular piece of slang. You know, I have a friend who actually was the first person to use normcore as a term in a comic, and it got picked up and got popularized, and now like people like Ira Glass are saying it. And it's like, it's fun to watch, like, oh wow, this one little mini comic where my friend said this funny thing, and like it just snowballed into like a cultural moment kind of thing. I want that for dog lunch. I don't need to be the one who came up with it. I just want to be the one who helped, you know, push it into the giant snowball where everybody's calling each other dog. Do I want people calling each other dog lunch? No, I don't. I just talked myself out of it.
Too late. Look what you did. You put it into the world and now you regret it. Now kids all over the world on the playground are calling each other, dog lunch, dog lunch. Jersey says, oh no, what have I done?
Right, right. Yes, I'm one of those scientists looking at the atomic bomb going like, oh, what have I brought into this world? No, I mean, if you bring it up as a cautionary tale. It's like Goofus and Galat, don't be a dog lunch.
That's the next shirt. What do we want as the opposite of dog lunch? Cat breakfast? Cat breakfast or dog lunch?
Ship Chase asks his friends if they need help. Dog Lunch just takes things from people. That's what you do. It's Ship Chase versus Dog Lunch. Oh, I'm sold. It's going to be a shirt. But yeah, I just, Ben, thank you so much for listening to all the episodes and supporting us in that way and, you know, talking us up in places where people would actually care about Transformers content. So that was exceedingly kind of you. And like the show itself is more than we deserve. So.
Okay, let's move on to this one.
So this is from Zach. Zach, who is a listener I've actually met in person. Hey, guys! Exclamation point. We're back in North America, everybody. I'm not making fun. I'm just noticing. I do the same thing. I use so many exclamation points. Just wanted to send some fan art I did of Rodimus. And this is Zach's first ever Transformers fan art. Are we going to put this in the show notes, Hoover?
Yeah.
Oh, this is great. Look at that. He's even giving the thumbs up. I love it. And the purple in the background with the moon. And Zach continues, I watched The Burden Hardest to Bear 3 times in a row, and it resonates even more after hearing Jersey break down the meaning of it. I saw that episode is listed as 1 in 3 pop culture references on Wikipedia to the concept of Giri, and is the first I've heard of it. Since Jersey asked to share a moment from Transformers, I've said my first experience was the Michael Bay version. In parentheses, he says, I saw it at school before spring break, so technically it was against my will, and I hardly remember it.
I love the justification there.
Yeah.
It wasn't my idea, guys.
All the kids were doing it. I didn't inhale. But I do recall playing the Beast Wars N64 game, hearing the 1986 movie soundtrack, seeing lots of art, but I don't think I ever saw it before streaming. I remember having a hard time telling robot brands apart as a kid, especially Gundam. One part now that stuck with me was on Money is Everything, 10 minutes, 10 seconds to 10 minutes, 28 seconds, Rippersnapper's line, why we quit, why we transform. The emotion in the music gave me goosebumps, like I was hearing a kid being told to stop playing. I always get wistful hearing it. I found this podcast from meeting Jersey at a book fair. Do you guys have any fun convention stories meeting people who worked on the series? Do you have a favorite Transformers artist, be it fan or official? It's been a joy to listen to this. I love hearing your genuine thoughts, personal stories, and plot breakdowns. Your podcast is my favorite fan series. I'm going to read that again. Your podcast, 4 million years later, is my favorite fan series, and I've listened to some episodes many times.
Wow.
Congrats for making it so far. Shout out to Hoover's editing and Jersey's upcoming book, Baron Von Bear. Thank you for that plug. I wish you both the best of luck with your future endeavors, Zach. Woo!
Jersey, when did you slip this kid $20?
I know. Well, I mean, I did meet him at a book fair, and he's a super nice guy. He's a fellow artist, as we could see by the fan art that he did. But yeah, I'm just grateful that Zach has such a kind and shimmering heart.
Yeah, thank you for sending your art along, Zach. Zach is probably one of a small handful of listeners to meet Jersey in real life. Now, as far as that why we quit, why we transform line sticking with you, that is the power of these voice actors, man. And Wally Burr instructing the voice actors. If anyone has a favorite line from Mask, I'd be really surprised.
Oh, I do. Mask, I hate them so much. Oh, and my second favorite line is, don't get in the tub with a radio.
Well, I recently talked about how the line from Rebirth Part 2, oh, noble Autobots make me want to puke, stuck with me all these years. And back when Jersey and I talked on the phone all the time, soon after we met, a good 25% of the discussion was just us quoting the show from memory of TV recorded VHS tapes.
True.
And as far as a favorite Transformers artist, I don't think I have a far and away favorite, but the list would definitely include Jeff Senior from the UK and US Marvel runs, as well as Guido Guidi from the Dreamwave and IDW runs. And I have never been to a TFCon myself, believe it or not, but Jersey has, and he definitely met some pretty famous guys. I mean, if you think Peter Cullen is famous.
Oh, we're best friends. We talk all the time. No, I've been to 2 Transformers conventions on purpose, and I always put in the on purpose because it's funny, and also it like further underlines that, no, I went out of my way. I traveled to go to this thing, right? It wasn't just in town. It wasn't just like, oh, is there a Transformers convention in town? Oh, I'll go. No, this is like, pack your bags. We're going to Syracuse, New York in 1997. Pack your bags. We're going to Lexington, Kentucky in 2006, right? So those are the two I went to. And in the BotCon 97 was incredible, only because it was so, the attendance was so low. Because, I mean, 1997, we were still only about 10 years out from when Generation 1 ended.
Wasn't that also only like the second BotCon?
I think that's right. And that, so this is not any kind of, I don't want this to reflect on BotCon as an organization. I know nothing about them. I mean, I really don't. I've purposely avoided knowing anything about like these conventions I go to because I don't want to find out any kind of bad news or good news. Just, I want to go enjoy the convention. But I'm contextualizing by saying that 1997, I had silk screened my own Autobot and Decepticon and Maximal shirts. Mm-hmm. And I was in college and I had access to screen printing equipment. And I mean, guys my own age made fun of me for still loving this stuff, right? Back then, to put it in context, only the really ultra nerdy loved this stuff that way.
Mm-hmm. It hadn't made its comeback in pop culture yet. You couldn't go to Hot Topic as of 1997 and get Transformers shirts like you could just a couple years later.
It really felt like a fringy kind of thing to love. And that's another reason Beast Wars was such a surprise, right? Mm-hmm. So 97, I remember I went to my job to pick up my paycheck and there was a guy, like, what was it? 97, I'm 23, right? And a guy who worked at the same job as me, same age as me, was like, he literally pointed at me and invited his friends to laugh at me a la high school. Because I was wearing an Autobot shirt, okay? So, like, that's where things were at that point. So, when I say BotCon wasn't highly attended, it's because only, like, the really diehard nerds still loved Transformers at the time. So, but what that meant was, is that we had such access to the talent, right? Like, Peter Cullen was just, like, sitting at a table in a room with, like, 60 people. Right. And like there was nobody getting in between us. When I went up to go get his autograph, he literally threw his arm around me and pulled me in to his body. Right. I got pulled into Peter Cullen's body, everybody. And you know the feeling you just got? But as it described that? Yeah, I had that feeling. That's the right feeling to have when that happens. Right. It's like electricity all through your appendages. So, and I mean, God, he's like way shorter than me, but like you just feel the manliness just like oozing out of him. It's like in the air around him. It's like this aura of like, just like, you know, when you say manly, what does it feel like? That's what it feels like. And he's so kind, you know. It's like I think he said this in an interview. It was like, he always thought of the Optimus Prime voice as like, he's strong enough to be kind or something like that. Mm-hmm. And that's who Peter Cullen is. So yeah, I met him. He signed my Transformers trading card and he wrote Dream On as in, and then he like clarified, he said, follow your dreams. I was like, oh, I will, Mr. Cullen. Absolutely. And then David Kaye was there that year. Venus Turzo was there that year, the voice of Black Arachnia. Bob Forward was there that year.
Yeah, Beast Wars was only like a year in at the time, so.
Yeah, and Bob Forward came in and he had a supercut of all of like the most violent scenes in Beast Wars season one. And it started with a title card that says, you know, for kids. It opens with the scene of Rhinox like killing Waspinator with his chain gun at the Standing Stones, that famous scene. Yeah, so this is right before Transmetals, right? And so all he said was, is that he's like, Beast Wars is going to get a lot shinier next year. And we're like, what does that mean? And the most amazing thing at that show was Stan Bush and Vince DiCola were both guests.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, and they were releasing the Till All Are One soundtrack, the full musical score of Transformers the movie.
Yeah, which, before this release, the movie had a soundtrack album.
That's right.
And it was on CD, but it was just like, here's some choice cuts from the movie.
Yep.
It wasn't the full score like we can get now.
Yeah, it was mostly the rock songs with a couple of pieces of Vince DiCola's score. I think it was like Attack on Autobot City, and then I forget what the other
Death of Optimus Prime was on there.
Oh, was it? Okay. Yeah, so I had that, but like this was the whole score. And then, as if they didn't give us enough gifts, they were like, Vince DiCola and Stan Bush are going to perform the whole score in concert at BotCon 1997. The attendance wasn't what you'd see today. So it was like maybe 100 people in this little room. And they did a laser light show. And Stan Bush is like doing little bits in between where he's giving like stories about like some of the ideas of these songs and like what his experience was making them. And Vince DiCola's got like six keyboards and he's doing all that stuff live, all the arpeggiated stuff. And it was, I mean, like, I get it why some people do drugs now. It's like, oh, this, if this is what drugs do to you, sign me up. Because this feels great. I feel like I'm in another dimension right now. So it was incredible. And getting to meet Stan Bush afterwards, and I got to you know, talk Vince DiCola, you know, for like 2-3 minutes, tell him what his music meant to me. So yeah, it was pretty cool. So then we go fast forward to 2006. Well, now the Michael Bay movie's coming out, right? And it's a 9-day experience. This show is like super high attendance. I had to wait 2 hours to meet Peter Cullen. Hmm. And the first time I met him in 97, I totally choked. I could not figure out what to say. We've all had this experience. I think you, when you met Danzig, what did you say to him? Can you tell us?
I said, I'm a fan of everything you do.
And he was like, thanks, dude. But so yeah, when I met Peter Cullen, I said something clumsy like that, and he was very kind and you know, gracious. But this time I'm like, okay, I've got 2 hours and I'm going to tell this guy what he means to me. And I got up there, and I feel like at this point everybody's like been exposed to like all of my most cringy aspects, so why not go all the way, hit the gas. I get up to him and I say, you know, I have loved so many of your characters all over the years, and I listed like 10 different characters, even Sindar from Visionaries. And I just want to say, like, the image that you gave me of what a good guy and what a bad guy could be has been something that's really sustained me my entire life. And he didn't stand up for the other people, but he stood up for me. And he's like, anybody who'd wait that long to share that with me must have a good heart. Now, I'm going to tell you this. Optimus Prime just told you have a good heart. What do you do with that, right? I defy anybody listening to this to have Optimus Prime tell them they have a good heart and not fall to freaking pieces, right? So I just said, well, I meant it with everything that I have, or everything that's in me, or something like that. And he shook my hand, and put his other hand on my hand and shook my hand. And I ran so hard to get away from that moment, because I'm like, I am, and I fell to pieces. I hid in a corner of the convention hall and I sobbed like a little kid who found out there's no Christmas. And I'm going to hold that memory in my heart forever and ever and ever. And then it's like the show kept giving. I met Simon Furman at the show, and I got to tell him what I always how much I've always enjoyed his nonverbal communication in his stories. Like when he has a character go like or grump, and how much I steal from him when it comes to that. Read Baron von Baer. I steal a lot from Simon Furman. And then I got to meet Blue Man Kuma, the voice of Tigatron. And I got to hear him say, as he threw his arm around me, he's like, I'm getting my picture taken with a cat named Jersey. I'm like, oh my God, just shoot me, hit me with the bus. It doesn't get any better. I just heard Tigatron say a cat named Jersey. And I met Airazor, who, you know, like, she's like, I'm like, can I get my picture taken with you? She's like, you're not going to put this on the internet, are you? I'm like, no, not now. So yeah, those were all really great experiences. And then I have a favorite Transformers artist. I'd have to agree with Hoover. I mean, I love Jeff Senior so much. Issue 75 of the American Marvel comic, when Unicron arrives in Cybertron, is so nightmarish. And I think it's his kind of staccato storytelling style and the rigid way he draws the characters that gives it its nightmarish quality. Yeah, I really enjoy his art style. And I know it's slipped into my own work in certain ways.
Everything is so powerful looking. Like, mm-hmm. Everyone's poses are so like turned up to 11. When someone's running, they're really running.
Yeah, and I think that's what I'm responding to, is like he hails from the time when American and I would say UK comic storytelling, because I think of even like Excalibur has this too. I forget who's the artist of Excalibur?
Alan Davis,
right? When his characters are running, they're really running. And I feel like that's something that kind of fell out of favor in the last like 25 years, where like a more kind of statuesque, sort of photorealistic approach really became the prominent style of like the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. And then as anime became more of an influence, other things happened. But what I love about Jeff's art in particular is that kind of like exaggerated comic booky kind of visual style, where it's implying movement in a way through its garishness. And I say garishness with all the love in my heart, because it's the style I'm going for in my work. But it's a style that I have found when I'm shopping my work around that it works against me. There are some editors who don't like it because it feels to them very garish. Like, can you dial it back and quiet your storytelling down by like 15%, right? Whereas, like, I feel like it was the norm in the 80s and into the early 90s, I would say, like, about the mid-90s and when the move started to switch over. And that's why I didn't really enjoy the IDW comics as much, because while the art was gorgeous, it was absolutely gorgeous, but the characters looked like they had a lot of weight to them. They looked huge, but the cost was, I felt like there was something energetically not there that was there in Jeff's work. And that's just my personal preference. It's not any kind of knock on the artists who did the IDW stuff. Like I said, they're all like accomplished illustrators, but it just didn't do very much for me.
Well, let's move on to the next letter here. Who's it from? All right.
This is from Matt. No idea where Matt is from, but I can guess because it starts with "Hello, Jersey and Hoover!" exclamation point. So somewhere I can drive to is my guess. And Matt says, if it's not too late to get one in for your mailbag episode, and even if it is, just thought I'd write to say how much I've enjoyed listening to the FMYL podcast. I've recommended it to many friends, and it's definitely rekindled my love of Transformers as a whole. I know who this is from. I know who this is from now. Okay, this is my buddy Matt on Twitter. Yes, Matt, who does Catbeard the Pirate, if I'm not mistaken. I even bought a handful of toys from the newest series. Cyclonus, my all-time favorite Decepticon. Huffer, who is my very first Transformers toy. And Kickback, whose original toy was one of my favorites. I was a huge fan of the original cartoon and comic, and later came to love Beast Wars and even some parts of Beast Machines, believe it or not. Ooh, we'll have to talk about that. I do hope you guys will continue the show and look into that part of the continuity. Maybe you can rebrand as 4 million years earlier for Beast Wars. That's intriguing. And spoilers, everybody. The podcast has been fun, funny, and deeply nostalgic. Thanks for making this old man's commute to work every day that much more entertaining. Now, on a separate note, I mentioned to Jersey on Twitter that the show made me decide to give Transformers Animated a try, the 2008 cartoon series, everybody. I finished it up recently and had a few thoughts. I think I'll approach it as a series of pros and Decepticons. Well, he's a cartoonist, which means, you know, we gotta lay on the funny even when it's dad funny. Pros. All of the Autobots and Decepticons feel like fully realized characters. Their personalities and interactions are really well written, and their actions are consistent with their characters. Totally agree. The voice acting is great and has lots of standout performances. The Constructicons as stereotypical construction worker types was delightful. The animation is overall very solid, with only a few episodes that I'd say look rough, and nothing even remotely close to Acom gonna Acom moment. That's true. The show sets up a lot of interesting plot elements and entertaining story threads. Cons. Okay, I'm just going to come right out and say it. I don't like the character designs. They never came together for me. I don't mind futuristic alt modes, but the Teen Titans Go aesthetic just flat out does not appeal. Special dispensation is given to Rekgar because for some reason it works on him. Possibly because his design seems like an homage to his original chunky toy. Maybe the Dinobots as well. Having the Autobots act as de facto superheroes versus reject Batman villains felt very pointless to me, especially once the Decepticons returned. Once those guys were back in the mix, human villains just felt like a step back every time they showed up. Not enough characters! I know it's a pretty common thing to focus on a smaller team of characters in newer animated shows, but doggone it, I love the huge range of character designs and personalities from the older shows. The Constructicons never formed Devastator. Boo!
I edited some of his more spoilery comments, so you can just hop on to Transformers Animated Train and watch away and not hear spoilers.
There we go. Despite all my cons, overall, I really enjoyed Animated, and I think it's probably the strongest 2D animated series since the original. Totally agree. Mm-hmm. It's kind of hard to compete with how good Beast Wars is, though, which frankly might be the best Transformers animated series ever. Hot take, you decide. Just note that I'm saying this as someone who first saw the toys and was hardcore truck not monkey for a while. Right there with you, Matt. He says, sorry for the novel. Feel free to tell me why I'm so wrong about Transformers Animated or why I'm a brilliant smarty pants. Yours, I can't deal with that now, Matt N. Now that's a good sign off.
Well, first off, 4 million years earlier is a hilarious name for our Beast Wars podcast, and if we were doing it, I would probably buy that name from you. Second, I'm so glad to hear that you tried TF Animated because of us. Jersey and I both love that show, and though much like you, when we first saw those character designs, I know I definitely crossed my arms and said, no. And what's funny is I said that to Jersey via Twitter, so every year in my Time Hop app, I'm reminded that I hated TFA on the first look. But that show was so good, it ended up not mattering what the characters look like. It's like when people complain about the early CGI on Beast Wars, I just say the story is so good that it does not matter, and you get used to it. So yes, people, if you've never watched Transformers Animated, do it. I agree that the human supervillains were not quite as captivating as the Decepticons, but I think they were just intentionally trying something different, and I can't fault them for that. As far as the number of characters, and I think both it and Beast Wars did a good thing to scale it back, because how deep are those characters, and how much did we get to learn about them in multiple episodes, as opposed to like G1, well, here's the Cosmos episode. Learn all you want, because this is all you're going to get.
Yeah.
You know, and plus you compare that to something like the Rebirth Part 3, where, like, characters are getting, like, one line, if that. Some of them not even getting a line. So it's hard to get a middle ground. You can either have a lot of characters and not get much characterization with them, or you can have a small handful and get excessive characterization. And I'll always err on the side of excessive characterization. And yes, there are definitely things to love about Beast Machines, though I positively hated those characters' designs even more than Transformers Animated. But the number one thing about Beast Machines, Jetstorm.
This is Captain Jetstorm speaking. Please feel free to move about the tarmac and flee for your miserable little life.
Look up the 12-minute Jetstorm supercut of Beast Machines on YouTube, and it will make you smile.
Yeah, I totally agree. We both fell hard for Jetstorm, and I would say his character, your mileage may vary, because he feels like sort of Robin Williams and Jim Carrey and Bruce Campbell merged into one guy.
And you throw in a dash of Captain Cole, Leonard Snart from Legends of Tomorrow.
Yes.
Which is weird, because it came before Legends of Tomorrow, but still.
Yeah, he's a villain who loves being a villain, and I wouldn't call him fourth wall breaky. He's not Deadpool, but he's got kind of like a running commentary on how awesome he is all the time.
Yeah.
But he can also get like murderously angry on the flip of a switch.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not like a maniacal, insane, quote unquote character like the Joker or anything like that. He's not trigger happy from season four, right? There's something really controlled about him, but he can like open the dam and go full on monster if he wants to. So he was just an intriguing villain in the show. And his design was intriguing in that he was the first Decepticon that I've ever seen who floats, right?
Yeah.
He didn't have legs.
He turns into a jet. He doesn't have legs. I mean, he just floats around. It makes sense.
Yeah.
Why would someone who turns into a jet need legs?
Right. Right. And there was something about that design that also spoke to, like, he never descends to our level, right? He thinks he's above us all, that kind of thing. So, yep, loved him. I loved the trio of the Viacons, Tankor, Jetstorm, and Thrust. There was a really cool kind of pairing of personalities where Tankor is, like, the big heavy who's, like, just pure on big, stupid heavy. And Thrust was Chester Cheetah. So, and I mean, and I remember when Beast Machines came out, we were both kind of like, I don't know.
Because it was a direct continuation of Beast Wars. So these were the characters we'd been following.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden they were ugly.
Yeah.
So it was really disheartening.
And then they introduced this whole idea of like, you have to like meditate to transform. And when you transform, it's no longer like the puzzle pieces moving around. It's more like they glow and they sort of morph into something else, which I remember the time I remember being like, I don't know how I feel about this, but that's how I felt when Beast Wars came out. So I got to give this a solid try, right? Beast Wars proved me wrong. So this is going to prove me wrong. But then I think we got to like season two and I was just like, I can't anymore. Even like Stryka is a really cool idea for a character. She was better in Transformers Animated. I loved her in Transformers Animated. She's in like two episodes, if that. But yeah, back on TFA, you know, I've said it a bunch of times and I know it makes people like really mad when I say it, but I feel like Tom Kenny's performance as Starscream, no, not Tom Kenny's performance, but the Tom Kenny Starscream is in my mind superior to the G1 Starscream. It takes everything about that Starscream that we love and just gives it a little bit of an edge and makes him funnier and sort of makes him more tragic in a way.
Yeah.
I'm not going to compare him to Chris Latta because I think that's apples and oranges, but I think the whole package of what we get, if you compare packages, here's Gen 1 Starscream, here's TFA Starscream, and I know this is only mine. I'm not trying to put this on anybody else. I'm not trying to convince anybody, but I'm just trying to offer this as a selling point of like, it was so good, it made me say something that I know in certain circles is heresy, right? So,
yeah, it's a hot take, but I can't really argue with it either. There is something so special about the original. But, you know, it's like they didn't do a whole lot with it.
Right.
Just kind of the same note over and over. Transformers Animated was like, how can we turn this up to 11?
Yeah. And how can we make him have his own kind of weird arc all based on everything he wants to do is to obtain power and overthrow Megatron? And I forget which season it is, but it ends with Megatron in stasis cuffs floating in deep space and Starscream's head is floating next to him. And then while the credits are rolling, you hear Starscream say, it's kind of funny when you think about it, but not really. And he starts crying. And that was the moment where my heart just like sprung out like three sizes like the Grinch. I'm like, oh my God, I love this guy. So, yeah, there's that. There's the whole, they do the thing with Optimus that I love that they did with Rodimus, but they didn't fully realize it. I think it's TFA, like, realizes a lot of things that I wanted to see in Gen 1. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the reasons I love it so much, right? We got to watch young Optimus become the Optimus we love, that we know and love from Gen 1 by the end of Season 3, right? And we watch him earn that, which is what I wanted to have with Rodimus. We get to see Starscream evolve from Megatron fell down, I'm the leader, into kind of scary guy at times. Mm-hmm. And the way they introduce the other Seekers, I think, is brilliant. And it feeds on like Starscream's narcissism. So,
yeah.
and when Starscream asks where the female Seeker came from, she says, you don't want to know. That line is so good. So, and then, yeah, there's that whole, in Season 3, there's like a prison break episode where Sentinel Prime, who is a new character, who is a fantastic addition to the show, because it's basically the Tick, but like with an attitude. It's like the Tick if he bought his own hype and was Optimus's direct competitor, right? Townsend Coleman, who played the Tick and plays Sentinel Prime, like he captures all the Decepticons at one point, and he's on his way home with this, you know, victory assured. I'm going to be the most celebrated leader in all of Autobot history. And then Swindle wakes up, who's played by Fred Willard, the amazing comedian. He wakes up, and then he like stages this coup on the ship, and it's joyful. It's so joyful. And they introduce one of your favorite Decepticons of all time, Lugnut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Lugnut is a super loyal troop. You know, in G1, you had loyal guys like Soundwave and Skywarp.
Shockwave.
But Lugnut is super loyal. Like, loyal to the point that he annoys Megatron.
Right. Yeah. It's like, in Gen 1, we get, like, Starscream's like, Megatron is no more, and Shockwave just says, but Megatron's indestructible, right? So you get a little bit of that whole, like, no, nothing bad can happen to Megatron. I believe in him so much. Lugnut's to where it's like, if you just say, like, oh, I, you know, Megatron's not as good a leader as you think, Lugnut will beat you up and then talk to nobody about how awesome Megatron is. He'll just look up at the sky and scream a poem about how awesome Megatron is, right?
Megatron cannot be stopped. Megatron is everywhere.
Yeah, they turn him up to 15 on that. And I agree with you, Matt, that when I first saw the designs, I was right there with Hoover. I was like, I'm probably not gonna watch this. Like, I liked the Teen Titans cartoon a lot, and I did watch Teen Titans Go. I even went and saw the Teen Titans Go movie in the theater. But I was not ready to see that on Transformers. And the story just got me. The story grabbed me so hard. And then when I, like, you know, saw interviews with the late, great Derek J. Wyatt and his thought process behind those designs, I was like, oh, I get it. You know, and now I think I have like an appreciation for his design language and the way he thinks about character and how they can be expressed visually. Yeah, I have nothing but fondness for it now, but I agree. Like, change is hard, right? And the thing that I keep coming back to as sort of like an operating principle for how I engage with Transformer shows is that change is always ultimately good, just like how the kids are always right, right? Young people, when they are making cultural change, and we go, oh, that sounds weird. It's like, when has it ever been wrong, right? Mm-hmm. It's usually pretty right, usually. So, and it's the same thing with Transformers. Like, it's I love how this intellectual property somehow is plastic enough, pardon the expression, that it can be morphed in all these different ways. And as long as you have like this basic idea involved, it works. And I don't understand why so many other properties that came out at the same time didn't last like that. Thundercats went through one iteration, and then we got Thundercats Roar, and a bunch of people lost their minds for some reason. You know, and I was like, dudes, look at Transformers. It's going to be okay. It's probably going to be a good show. No, I hate it. It looks different, right? G.I. Joe, Real American Hero. You can't do it with that. Strawberry Shortcake, kind of, you know. But it's like nothing's lasted the way Transformers has. And, yeah, I'm sure the Michael Bay movies helped a lot. But it was doing fine before that, too, right? So, I mean, we had Transformers R.I.D. We had Beast Wars. We had Beast Machines. We had, you know, Gen 2. What did we have after? Well, we had Armada, for crying out loud. It was still going. So, yeah, I think that it's fun that, and it's a gift that we get all these different iterations on and these reimaginings of the series. And if there's one thing that I don't feel as strong about it now, just because I'm old and I realize that my ability to change the world is finite. So I'm not beating this gong as hard as I used to, but I just always felt like the comics world could learn from what the Transformers did, in that it's like, what if the Avengers just look different every 4 years? Mm. Right? What if you just reimagine the whole concept of it? And I don't mean to pick on one of your favorite books. Like, I could turn them around and say this with, say, Doom Patrol, right? Or, you know, just pick a comic series. But like the fact that comics was so, American mainstream superhero comics was so beholden to this continuity and this cohesiveness, I felt like, well, Transformers has shown they can refresh it every 3 years and grab a whole new audience while still holding a significant portion of the old audience. Like, that seems like a pretty magic formula. We should be playing with that with more things. But anyway, did I miss anything else in his email? Yeah, we already talked about how we were right there with him with Truck Not Monkey with Beast Wars, but we fell in love with the show. So I don't think you're wrong about anything, Matt. I think if anything, I would say, yeah, you're a smarty pants. So as it turns out, Matt followed up with another message after that, and it runs as follows. I was listening to the Season 4 Autobots episode, and I found it interesting to hear yours and Hoover's very different reaction to the later Transformers toys than mine. Aha! Here we go. Matt continues, I was all about the gimmick toys, except Headmasters, which I'll get into in a minute, when I was younger. Monsters? Why, yes, the Terracons and Seacons are, in fact, two of my favorite combiner teens. Thank you. Punch and Counterpunch? Heck yeah, he's a triple changer with two robot modes instead of two vehicle modes. Clones? Oh boy, how do they make both of the robots turn into two different things? Target Masters? His gun is a little man's? I'll take as many as I can get. I'm raising my voice as his all caps takes full effect into the email. And he continues, the only ones I didn't really want were the Headmasters, because my reasoning was that if you accidentally lost the mini Transformer, your robot was now basically useless. I only had one of them, Nightbeat, because I loved his comics character and thought his design was pretty good. But I remember being constantly worried that I was going to drop his head somewhere. I think maybe I was a kid who was into the engineering just as much as the characters. Jersey talked about how he had to tamp down his hope of Fortress Maximus. For me, that was Six Shot. We were dirt poor, and I remember he was pretty expensive, but my gosh, the idea of a robot that had six modes captivated me. I can understand why you guys weren't as into it, though. The vehicle modes were increasingly outlandish and alien, and you never really saw many characters that looked like they might have been hiding among the cars and planes we encountered every day. Anyway, just thought you might like to hear from an alternate perspective on those later figures, Matt N.
Awesome. Thank you, Matt, for offering those perspectives. I am all for hearing opinions opposite to mine, especially when they're so arbitrary and not about Skylynx. I just have never been a monster guy at any age, so when Transformers suddenly was a lot of robotic creatures and monsters, I had trouble remaining interested. But monsters and animals are popular with most kids, so it totally makes sense for Hasbro to go down that road. So I can totally appreciate where you're coming from. And that idea of losing the headmaster, that I completely identify with that, because you're right. If you lose the little guy, you have a robot without a head. That's not a very fun toy.
Yeah. Yeah, that is something that I feel like I overlooked when talking about these figures, because I remember, and I know I shared this story on the podcast before, but when I was in kindergarten, so this would be 1979, everybody, the 70s, I was in school, my parents got me a Chewbacca action figure, and I was sitting in the back of my dad's Volkswagen Rabbit, and I opened the toy with such enthusiasm that the crossbow fell into the seat. And a couple weeks later, you know, like my dad got in a car accident and the car got wrecked. He's fine, but the car got taken away to the junkyard. And I was like, but what about my gun? What about my gun? And my mom was like, it's gone now. But your dad's fine. Thank you very much, son. I'm like, but my gun. But I just want my gun. I just want what's coming to me. I just want my fair share. But it became a family rule that you did not open the toys in the car, because it's going to cause drama when you lose a part. And so I can identify with that anxiety. And in hearing Matt's story, it just makes you think of like every like type A kid in the United States getting these toys. Like, here's your new toy, son or daughter. But what if I lose the head? Don't lose the head. But what if I lose the head? Don't lose the head. This kid just walking around with sweat beads on their forehead all the time. Don't lose the head. Oh, yeah, that was an oversight on the toy designer's part. Oh, man.
And then when they did the Titan Masters a couple of years back, the heads were even smaller. So even bigger risk.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, those toys were really marketed at guys like us who just put them in robot mode and put them on a shelf, right?
That's true.
Like, we're not in the playground. Like, well, we could. You want to meet on the playground, Hoover? We could. I'm not against it. Oh, man. But yeah, Matt, thank you. And anybody who wants to check out his comic, Catbeard the Pirate, just do a search for Catbeard the Pirate. That's right. His beard is a cat. So... I'm going to move on to Trevor's email.
Go ahead.
All right. This is from Trevor. Good afternoon, Jersey and Hoover. Uh-huh. Is this person in the North America?
No exclamation
or not?
Point.
It ends with a comma. Mm-hmm. So this could be somebody who exceeded in English class, or they're from overseas. First, I want to thank you so much for the last couple of years of amazing podcasts. Even though I've watched the series many times myself, I've rewatched it again along with you. Oh, man. Thank you. I enjoyed being taken on this guided journey through the podcast. I love listening in to reminisce on all the fun Transformers adventures of the past. You both always bring so much to the podcast, and I appreciated your perspectives. Jersey, I really liked your efforts at providing critical thought around the art and design in ways that I had never done before. More than that, I appreciated how you brought child psychology and things you learned in teaching art classes over the years. And Hoover, I appreciated your way to do the editing and cutting in those fantastic commercials from the 80s. The commercials really cemented the time and place of when we first saw these cartoons and played with these toys. When I say we, I mean that I was also a child of the 80s, although I was a bit younger than you both. I was 8 when Transformers the movie came out. I grew up watching Generation 1 very much the same as you, but seasons 1 and 2 were a blur for me because it was just part of my existence. I loved the first seasons, but because I was younger, maybe I appreciated season 3 a little bit more. Some of the characters that you don't have as much love for, like Wheelie and Daniel, I enjoyed, but because I was connecting differently. I was probably mentally in the same place as Wheelie and Daniel at that age, so episodes like Surprise Party felt more authentic to me than something like Call of the Primitives. Obviously, I love them all now, but there's a special place in my heart for the goofy episodes that Hoover says, it's season 3, it probably doesn't even make sense. I didn't say that right, let me do it again. It's season 3. It probably doesn't even make sense.
Don't think too hard. It's season 3. It probably doesn't even make sense.
Since I just finished listening to your season 3 Autobots episode, I got to listen to you both rag on Springer again. You know, I think you got Springer all wrong. He wasn't designed as the rogue character you think he was. I think he was designed as the big brother character. As the oldest child in my family, I never had a big brother. However, I think that I probably related to Springer as the type of big brother I would have wanted. He seems to be too cool to hang out, but he still cared enough if you got hurt. He seems like the type of guy that always seemed to have a wisecrack, but would defend you if a bully tried to push you. That was how Springer seemed to my little brain at the time. Mm-hmm. If I had to pick a favorite episode of yours, it was probably the Day of the Machines. The Day of the Machines, Hoover. And here's why. As he continues, usually you are both very positive. Well, Jersey can usually find something positive. But, but in this episode, I seem to remember you both went full snark. I love the honesty and sincerity you usually pack into this podcast. However, every now and then, it's great to hear you take an opportunity to take aim with both fusion cannons firing. Much like the action in the episode, you cranked up the humor to 11. One of my favorite things that you both did earlier in the podcast, but not as much lately, is the Trapped in a Cave segment. So if you had to pick some characters from the show that didn't have an opportunity to interact and trap them in a cave so you could hear them interact, who would you pick? For example, we never had a chance to see Prowl and Ultra Magnus together, so I'd like to hear them bicker about their narcissism of small differences. How about you? Is there anyone else you'd choose to put in a cave so you could learn a little bit more about them? I'd love to hear you do the Trapped in a Cave segment again, if and when you tackle Beast Wars and Beast Machines. Before I wrap this letter, I wanted to recommend the Transformers Cyberverse series to you. If you like G1 and animated, I think you will really enjoy it. Episodes are only 10 minutes long and free on Hasbro Pulse. You could probably do a review in a fraction of the time one of the Generation 1 episodes. That's true. Each season is better than the last, and it reinvents itself throughout. Okay, I'm intrigued. I am sure you will really enjoy Cyberverse Season 3 if you like the weirdness that sometimes happens during Transformers. 4 million years later, a Transformers podcast has been a great companion to listen to on walks, commutes to work, and during workouts. I think that overall you guys have done a phenomenal job on this show, and I really am glad that I've had the chance to listen to it. Jersey and Hoover, I hope you continue to podcast, but if you don't, you can be proud of your success here. I wish you guys the best and hope that we have an opportunity to hear more about what comes next for you both. Till all are one, regards, Trevor S. Wow.
Awesome. I really like your take on Springer, Trevor. The way you describe him makes him sound cool, so again, I appreciate opinions that differ from mine. And as you say, you were 8, I was 10, and Jersey was about to turn 12. Yeah. So we're each viewing this character as subtly different. Mm-hmm. I'm reminded of some situations where a new person comes into either a class or a retail situation, and one person has one take on the new person, and another has a totally different one. They're all talking about the same person, but maybe concentrating on completely different aspects. Neither of them are wrong, but they both have opposite opinions. And clearly, Jersey and I love analyzing characters to death. So I really appreciate a situation where I have a reason to reevaluate a character. As far as who I'd trap in a cave together, my go-to Decepticon is often Thundercracker, because I feel he's not as mean as the other Decepticons. I'm not sure what Autobot to pair him with, maybe even Optimus Prime. I think with just a few hours with Optimus, Thundercracker could really be rethinking his life pretty quickly. I know the tech spec has the line, "Not totally convinced of the Decepticons' cause, but they've persuaded him to continue battling Autobots." And that is a fun idea to play with. I think if you really present to Thundercracker the harm he's doing, he'd reveal that he doesn't really have any malice towards anyone. I know IDW played with this concept with him. So that's probably my go-to idea. It's like, who can we stick in with Thundercracker to really make him reevaluate himself? I mean, honestly, there's a lot of fun choices even beyond Thundercracker on the Decepticon side. So Jersey, what's your sort of first thought trapped in a cave concept? Who do you want to throw in there?
You want to know what literally came to mind as you were talking? Is me and Bumblebee.
Now, we're supposed to learn about these characters and learn their differences. They're not supposed to be buddies and enjoy the cave because they're so positive and optimistic.
That'd be my first wish if I found that magic lamp. I'm like, okay, I want replace Charlie with me in the Bumblebee movie, please. And just like, instead of fighting Decepticons, we go out for ice cream. Let's see, who would I put? You know, I would love to see something along the lines of like first aid and some Decepticon, right? I feel like we got a little taste of that with Swindle and first aid. And I feel like that would be a really interesting place to go, is take somebody who is so deeply principled that it actually causes him grief with somebody with zero principles and have them have to do something together where Swindle benefits from operating on a principle just once and first aid learns that, you know what, all people sin at some point or another. You can't be totally pure, right? and sometimes it's okay, you know, that kind of thing. That would be fun for me to daydream about. I just go to like the bank of who are my favorite characters in the show, and it would be, you know, Beachcomber, first aid, Bumblebee, Grapple. Oh, who would I put with Grapple? oh, Grapple with Rumble would be pretty good. You know, somebody who is like inartful, inelegant. His whole thing is wrecking things, right? Or Grapple and Hook, right? There you get that narcissism of minor differences thing. I love the image of Prowl and Ultra Magnus, especially when you think about the way Prowl was written in the American comic book with the total, like, you know, broomstick up the tailpipe kind of idea with Ultra Magnus. Like, who's more uptight? Go. So, for me, it's those opposites that are so intriguing. And this is something I do in my comics classes all the time, as I talk about, you know, Shakespeare's mighty opposites. You take Batman and the Joker, and it works because Batman doesn't smile and he's always hunched over. The Joker moves around wildly and he's always laughing. Batman only wears black. The Joker wears a lot of colors, that kind of idea. So you just take any two characters who are diametrically opposed in the Transformers universe, and you've got something with juice in it. So, yeah, I would say of the Decepticons, probably the least principled characters, I would say, are Rumble and
Skywarp, maybe?
Swindle, right.
Yeah, Swindle.
Well, yeah, Skywarp like is like deferential to Megatron in a way that Rumble is not. Because Rumble will speak slang to Megatron. Megatron, we all thought you were, you know? Mm-hmm. And then Megatron's like, think again! You know, so... Yeah, then the opposite would be to take a deeply principled character from the Decepticons and match them against a deeply principled character in the Autobots. So, okay, now you got Shockwave and First Aid. That would be interesting. Shockwave and Onslaught. That would be interesting to me. Mm. Or not Shockwave and Onslaught. First Aid and Onslaught. There you go. So, or Chip Chase and any of those people, because I want to see Chip Chase make everybody better. I want to see a story where Chip Chase makes Shockwave realize that his slavish devotion to Megatron is diminishing him as a robot, and he'll have a bigger and more fulfilling life, a life of abundance, if he just lets go of that idolatry. There you go. There's a story. Okay, that's it. I'm putting a red circle around Chip Chase and Shockwave in a cave. That's mine.
Well, as far as Cyberverse, we actually both started that one and then just sort of fell off, and unfortunately we just never made our way back to it. It definitely had some things going for it, like had Seekers all over the place, and I really liked that. And I found out later that they introduced a female take on Lugnut called Clobber, and that really made me intrigued. So maybe someday I'll revisit that series. And man, thank you so much for the kind words.
Yeah, that was a lot, in a very good way. I just felt like, you know, it's like you gave me ice cream and then you gave me a milkshake on top of the ice cream and then you made it into a root beer float and then you put it in a pancake. So so thank you for that, Trevor. And yeah, I Cyberverse, I know it has fans, and my YouTube recommendations keep suggesting clips, and I get like these supercuts of like all the times Soundwave was awesome in Cyberverse. And it does look cool. I mean, it looks great. What I got stuck on is I think it was, I think I only made it like maybe like 7 or 8 episodes in, and I just kept getting stuck on the whole, like, Bumblebee doing the radio clips for all of his dialogue, which is, like, cute a couple times. And, like, the eighth time, I was like, all right, I know the joke, you know? And I'm kind of not digging seeing Bumblebee, like, being hammy like that. And this is my baggage of, like, Bumblebee's got to be a certain way, you know? Because when, this goes back to Transformers Animated, when Bumblebee shows up and he's kind of a brat, I'm like, I don't know about that. It's, like, more than the visual look. I was like, Bumblebee being snarky to Optimus, that does not compute. So I think it's harder for me to get over an interpretation of Bumblebee. Transformers Prime was the same thing. When I saw what Bumblebee looked like and acted like in that show, I was like, I don't know. But then I fell in love with that Bumblebee too. So yeah, I will give it a shot. And I do know that I've gotten enough clips of later episodes to know that it, like, really, really cool things happen in the show. And also, I mean, Trevor, you knew exactly which switch to flip with me when you said, like, things get weird. Okay, I'm in. if things get weird, especially in a Kathleen Madigan way, I'm super into any show. So, but yeah, Trevor, that was awesome of you. That was a very kind email. And you know, if I were to do the meditation circling thing, I'm feeling warmth in my arms and chest as I read it. So you want to move on to Andrea's email?
Well, here's our final letter of the episode.
All right. So, I mean, you can keep on sending emails and we can respond to them 4 million years later at gmail.com. But this is our last email for the mailbag episode. So this is from Andreas. My introduction to Transformers was on the schoolyard in the early 90s. Transformers were always being traded, borrowed, broken on the playground. Yeah, that sounds familiar. We were all hooked. There were also a few rock lords knocking around, but we won't talk about those. Andreas, you could whisper it in my ear. I'll always remember my mom coming home from the supermarket with Transformers the Movie on video cassette. My brother and I thought it was the best thing we'd ever seen. Soon after, we began to catch reruns of the cartoon on TV and tape them. It was amazing to see the stories and characters behind the toys we'd loved and sought after for what seemed like forever at the time. I'd tape the shows, pause them, and hold paper over the glass TV screen so I could trace the characters. That's awesome. I was always sure that it was the visual impact of the show that left a lasting impression on me. The striking logos, boxy shapes, and shell suit colors. It all felt like a natural extension of the sensory experience of the toys and an extension of the packaging. Listening to your show was lovely and nostalgic, but also helped me to realize how much some of the sounds and voices were imprinted on me. I enjoyed every show. Nice one, Jersey and Hoover. Thank you. Best, Andreas.
Andreas, pausing the VCR and tracing the TV screen is brilliant, and I'm mad that I never thought of that as a kid. I was definitely drawing things from my videotapes, but I never made the now obvious leap of tracing the figure to get it copied better. We had to go through so much work in the 80s to watch things, be home and in front of the TV at this specific time. Oh, not home? Well, set the VCR, and then you mess up like Jersey, and you miss the first 90 seconds of a show. You kids these days near play on demand. We couldn't screen cap the screen and save JPEGs of what we were watching. And I really always enjoy hearing others wax philosophical about our favorite cartoons. Just the imagery of playing on the playground, like, look, we have this Transformer. He's missing a leg, but he's still pretty cool.
Yeah.
This reminds me of how magical the 80s were to us who experienced it. And I hope today's kids find their own childhoods magical when they look back on them. It'll be in a different way, I'm sure, than we do, but I really hope that they do like their time growing up as much as we did. Yeah.
Related to what you were sharing about how we engaged and encountered media as children, I recently did a residency in an elementary school, and I kid you not, an 11-year-old kid came up to me and asked, unironically, what YouTube channels I subscribed to when I was 11. And when I said there was no YouTube when I was 11, that kid looked at me like I just said, like, you know, people ate people back then.
It was the sucked Pikachu face.
Yeah. It literally turned into that. That's what kids could do now. It's amazing. But yeah, I don't remember if I held up the paper to the TV and traced or not, but I do remember really liberally taking advantage of the pause button. And so I could, like, oh, that's what Blur's helmet is shaped like. So I could draw it on my paper. And I remember It might have been one of my parents warning me that don't do that too much. It'll stretch the tape. Yeah. You'll get like warping, you know, lines through it. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. I just wanted to draw blur.
You know, yeah, because your parents ran a video store, so they were a little more knowledgeable about that. Whereas I remember my first VCR would only pause for like 5 minutes and then it would stop.
Really?
So it's like, yeah, I remembered like trying to draw something from Robotech. So I had to like pause it at just the right time. And I only had 5 minutes to do it because it was about to go to stop. I guess because it's basically like pulling at the tape all that time. And it's like, okay, we can't do this for an extended period of time. At least not the old VCRs.
Mm. Something else that Andreas introduced in as an idea is this idea of the traded, borrowed, broken playground toys. And this is something that I hadn't thought about in a while, but I wonder how much of this is prevalent today. I'd have to go on some playgrounds to see. But when I was a kid, as I'm sure it was for a lot of us who grew up in the 80s and maybe in the 90s, like it was not uncommon to just come across a half-busted toy in a mud puddle on the playground, like in a band, like, you know, it, like I actually had a pretty substantial collection of Black Star figures all gotten that way. Oh, here's the guy with the bird head with only one arm. I've got four of those little green goblins. Oh, I got an orange one now, you know. And I didn't know what they were from, right? But like, it was just like, it was something that just was like a common occurrence to just find toy detritus. Now, in my case, I lived literally across the street from my school that I went to. And I know this is not uncommon, but I don't know how many this was the case for. So like all summer long, I could just like go walk around the school grounds and find all sorts of weird things like that. So the idea of finding, and I remember I found like a Wheeljack with only one arm and his wings was gone, you know, like that was another way that I encountered some of these Transformers for the first time, was like the poor, unfortunate child who broke it and maybe out of a fit of anger or maybe just, you know, carelessness, left it on the playground, right? So did you ever find stuff on the ground like that when you were a kid?
I don't think I really did very often.
Huh. In Corpus, they just sank into the ground in the swamp-like land.
True. I did lose, you know that perch that Zoar comes on?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I lost that because I foolishly buried it at my playground, which was just the part of the playground I buried it in was like all gravel. It wasn't like dirt or any of that. But I like buried it like, I thought like 3 inches down or something. But somehow I could not find it. I was like, where did it go? I don't understand. So that's how I lost my perch for Zoar.
This must be a common experience for kids too, is like the idea of burying something is being somehow like I'm protecting it, I'm saving it for later, and like not knowing where, like not being able to retrieve it later. My little brother and I totally did this on our school playground. Like during the summer, we went to the big sandbox and we're like, let's make the Sarlacc pit. And we're going to put all our Star Wars guys all around it. And like, hey, let's put the Star Wars guys in the Sarlacc pit and then cover it up. And we're like, awesome. And then like the next day we're like, oh yeah, we should go back and get our Star Wars guys. And we went and they were gone. Right. It's like maybe some other enterprising child was sitting in the distance like, you know, they're all mine. But it was like 15 guys that we lost in one go because we were dum-dums. We were like, yeah, it'll be fun to bury our toys, then come back for them. So I wonder if that happened to anybody else. I'm sure it did. But and then I want to respond to his sentence about like, you know, I'll always remember my mom coming home with from the supermarket with Transformers the movie on video cassette. And what I love about this image is like, because we all know what happens in Transformers the movie. So like, it's just, it's a moment that's so infused with meaning, both in that the innocent joy of seeing that tape, knowing that an amazing movie is waiting for you to watch. And then also the conflicting ideas of, oh, this movie's not exactly for children, you know, is all in that. But I remember, because I didn't get to see it in the theater until, what, a year later. We told the story in the Transformers the movie coverage. But I remember when my parents were running that video store, I harangued them. You know, I was like, every day, I'm like, did you get Transformers the movie yet? I see it in the catalog. It's right here. I circled it. When are you getting it for the video store? They said to me, like, are people going to rent it? I'm like, everybody's going to rent this movie. I guarantee it. Everybody in the world's going to want to watch this movie. And so, like, it was months they were dragging their feet on it. And I remember the day when my mom said, like, okay, I'm coming home, bringing Transformers the movie. I kid you not, I'm 13, right? I'm too old to do this. I ran upstairs in my bedroom. I just jumped on the bed. I was like, it's happening. Today I'm going to see it. I'm going to see it again today. You know, so I just want to connect with that memory of, like, so many young people seeing that video cassette with the silver you know, and the foil logo on and everything, and just being like, oh my gosh, what is about to happen now? I am not going to be able to unsee, right? It's the best. So, and will we ever be that happy again, Hoover? Probably not. Oh, so thank you, Andreas.
Well, man, really, I'm just really humbled by all these kind words from everyone. I mean, people called me funny. People said we were entertaining. They even said we did a phenomenal job. So thank you so much, everyone, for that. This has been a lot of work over the past 3 years, and I'm never fully happy with anything I do, which is why I haven't re-listened to any episode more than once after editing it. So if I go back and re-listen, I'll just hear everything that I did wrong and want to re-edit and re-record, and I'll go, how could I not have brought this up? And I would just completely George Lucas everything on all the episodes and want to re-edit the new versions once I finish those. So I'm just letting them go. They remain up for future people to come across. We do want this to be an evergreen thing that people can always come back to. And many of our listeners already have. That's great. We want this thing to be around for years after the subject, after we've made them. You know, we intentionally made it, you know, fairly irrelevant when we were recording them. We weren't like, what does this episode mean in 2021? You know, it doesn't matter. I mean, we just analyze the episodes and talk about these things that we were watching like 30 years ago. So, I mean, to everyone who told friends, bought and wore our merch, thank you so much. It's not been an easy 3 years, that's for sure. But it's been rewarding, and thanks to you listeners, it's been validating. So thank you all for caring. It means more than words can say. And maybe now you're saying, Hoover, didn't you mention talking about your past and future fanfics on this episode as well? Yes, I did. But I have bumped that talk to our final episode, where I thought it would fit in a little bit better, and this one's already running pretty long anyway.
Yeah.
So next episode is, for the time being, our final episode, but only for the time being. We will look back on the podcast and all the problems that got in our way in the making of it and how we overcame those problems, and we'll reflect on Transformers as a whole. And maybe, just maybe, you'll get to hear about some of the fanfics that I wrote in college.
Can I offer a little teaser that'll make them really want to listen to it?
Yes.
The space bridge is a toilet.
Well, in my defense, I wrote some serious fanfics, a couple, and then some intentionally silly fanfics.
Yes. Yes. It's very, I would say, it's in the spirit of Evan Dorkin, is like some of your fanfics, right? Like milk and cheese kind of humor. Especially
with the funny ones I did as comic strips, where I could have a lot of visual stuff thrown in there.
Oh, Optimus is so angry all the time. He is such a bad person. It's your version. Like even Adult Swim can't come close to how nasty your Optimus was. So like Robot Chicken is like, hey, I'm gonna make a nasty Optimus. Hoover already beat you there. He already did the, you know, the Clerks edition of Optimus Prime, the milk and cheese edition of Optimus Prime. So yeah, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about my much less interesting fanfic ideas where I was trying to knit together like mythological stuff. Oh God, Hoover, I've always been a pompous prig. All right. Well, thank you to everybody who has been sending all those really nice letters. And I love the image of Hoover listening to past episodes and George Lucasing them. I love that that's a verb now. That means like to endlessly revise something to the point of absurdity is to George Lucas it. But that's my experience with art, is that we just have to eventually say, like, this is the best I could do with the time I had. And I got to walk away from it, else I go insane. So
that's the big lesson I took away from this.
Yeah, that's every graphic novel I've ever done, and I look back at them again and I think this is okay, but here's 55 things I would make better. But what can you do? You know, we're ever changing people. But yeah, I'm grateful to hear that this thing was meaningful to people and that it helped them connect with their love of the franchise. And Hasbro, if you want to send us any free Transformers for all of the work we did to promote your, you know, I could really go for a Masterpiece Mind Wipe figure, even if it's third party one. You got the money, Hasbro.
I don't think Hasbro's going to send you a third party figure.
I think I deserve it for all of my story analysis I've done.
Once you're like, you know, these guys took our designs and made toys of them without our permission, but that jersey is just so
that's
lovable.
Right. I just want what's coming to me. I just want my fair share.
Well, I do have the Siege Skylinks on order, but Hasbro, if you have one sitting around.
That's right. That's right. We earned it. We elevated your property with all of our joyful analysis and commentary. And if you can't swing that, you could send me a real cooking case of big oven. That would be nice.
Oh, man. I thought we were going to get through this without referencing that one again, but
yeah, it's going to be a t-shirt in the T Public store. And I think that one, we would just lift the logo straight out and not even try to put a joke around it.
Excellent.
It is the joke. All right. Thanks, everybody, for downloading and listening. The show currently drops on Thursdays, but it's archived at 4millionyearslater.com. And once again, I have been Jersey Drozd of 4millionyearslater.com and rss.jdrozd.com for everything I make.
I've been Hoover.
Okay, bye.
Goodbye.
Episode synopses are from imdb.com and some episode information taken from tfwiki.net. Closing theme is by Nick Mihalik, based on the original closing theme by Ford Kinder and Ann Bryant. You can find more of Nick's music at soundcloud.com/Nicholas-Mihalik.
That's spelled NICHOLAS-MEHALICK.
Find us on Facebook under 4 Million Years Later, and you can email us at 4millionyearslater@gmail.com.
Visit 4millionyearslater.com, and if you haven't yet, please subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts. You know how it works.
I get it why some people do drugs now. It's like, oh, if this is what drugs do to you, sign me up. 'Cause this feels great. I feel like I'm in another dimension right now.